Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Fortress Comic News, episode 363. I'm one of your hosts, Chris, alongside my co-host, Mike. What's going on, Mike?
Hey. Not too much, Chris. We got a cool interview today with Mr. Mark Maya on the show, head of the YouTube channel Board Game Geek. Yeah, very cool project he's doing on Kickstarter, a comic book called So-Called Living. So we're going to talk about that in a little bit.
Good conversation, good stuff.
Yeah, wish we could talk more about board games, but unfortunately, Chris, this is a comic book podcast.
I did sneak it in that once.
Yeah.
When we had the comic book themed board game.
Yeah. Very rarely do we come across those. But when we do, hey, we got another video game comic book video game today to talk about those. So we can talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah.
That's always fun. Yeah, it's always a good time. Go ahead.
I tried something new this week, Mike.
You read your comics backwards?
Well, yes, I got manga.
Oh shit, Badland, there it is. Nice. Nice.
No, have you seen these float tanks? The sensory deprivation float
tanks? Yes, so I have some friends that have done them out actually your way, Western New York area. And I've heard good things, but kind of strange things. I don't know what your experience was.
So I've heard like the very hippie stoner version of it. Like, oh, it puts you in a place and like you see things.
You see things. What the hell?
Yeah.
And like, you take shrooms before you go in. Huh?
I think those people did too many drugs and it's just like reacting to their brain wrong.
Yeah.
It's the ultimate relaxation, dude.
So this is what I vision, Chris.
Okay.
If anybody's ever watched Ben Affleck Daredevil, when he goes to sleep at night,
I forget about that movie.
But I think it's a coffin that he sleeps in, but he like submerges himself like almost completely underwater, where it like covers his ears.
Yes.
To like tone out everything because he has a heightened sense of everything except he's blind. But is that what it's like?
That is exactly what it's like. Except you're in a There's different versions of it. There's one that's just like a giant pool.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. It's like a room.
Like a swimming pool site? Like,
no, I shouldn't say giant pool. It's like a big bathtub.
Okay.
Like, and it's a room, but the room is soundproof.
Yep.
And they give you ear plugs.
Okay.
And you literally just lie there in this water that has like Epsom salts and shit in it.
Uh-huh.
So the only annoying part is like you're very salty afterwards, and I'm salty enough, Mike. I don't know.
Yeah, you don't need more salt. Yeah.
And it's literally just like lying there and just, I don't know, just complete silence.
Uh-huh.
And the weird part they have to get used to is that your body is, there's no anchor to anything. Like, right. You're just there.
Uh-huh.
And it's almost like you're in, I've never been in space, but it's almost like you're in space.
And like space, everybody.
Just like nothing around you.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And you do like have moments where you're like, fuck, my body's like, I thought my body was just like shifting
as if I was in zero G. You weren't moving at all.
Yeah, and you're just there. It's,
Literally,
it comes to an end. They like play the soft music because it is like very
like when you open a chest in Zelda.
Yeah, basically. And that happened, and it was an hour. And I remember at one point I was sitting there. I was like, I've been here for 10 minutes, and I don't think I could do this anymore.
Yeah, I would probably freak out. But
and that thought came in my head, and minutes later, the music came on. And I'm like, I've been in here for an hour.
That's crazy. It's like the hyperbolic time chamber, folks.
Yeah.
Dragon Ball Z reference.
I wouldn't time.
I'll
ever do it again, but it was interesting.
So I've had an experience with so a lot of our customers make machines that have to be isolated in these chambers that don't generate any noise.
Mm-hmm.
And they have like microphones in there to listen for defects. And I got to go in one of these rooms and we shut the door and I immediately like complete silence. But then it's weird. When I was in the room for like 30 or 40 seconds, my brain or my ears, I firmly believe I have some sort of tinnitus just from like fucking up my ears for all the concerts over the day. But like,
if I do, you do.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And I hear like your brain almost generates noise. It's so quiet. You know what I mean? Did you have that experience or no?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay. Like your brain's almost like, no, it's too quiet. I'm like, you gotta hear something. And it's like you almost start to hear shit, which is insane.
Dude, it's so weird because I've never lived in a big city. Like, mm-hmm. I know you've lived in cities.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like not like New York City or right, anything. Right. But you know, like I've never even lived in like the closest thing to a city is the city I live in, which when you tell people when they visit where I live, they laugh at you. Yeah, and it's literally a city, but when you say that, they're like, this ain't a fucking city.
This ain't a city, bro.
Yeah, but by definition, we are a city.
Yep.
I've lived there, and I've lived out in the country, and, like, both have their own, like, background noise.
They have their noises, yeah.
And to literally have nothing is so surreal.
Mm-hmm.
It was an interesting experience. I would recommend. I'm not gonna say like it's gonna fucking change your life or you're gonna fucking see shit or anything. I'm not doing that. I'm just it's an experience.
Yeah,
and I would recommend trying it out.
Yep. You'll see MODOK. MODOK will come to you and speak. So,
funny part to that, but real quick, there's also couples versions where you can have two people in there at once, so you can do it with like your girlfriend or your wife or whatever.
Yep.
But I did wear my MODOK t-shirt to the play. So
nice. They should call them MODOK takes, cause that's probably what it feels like to be MODOK all the time. Cause he's like floating, right?
But
why isn't that what it, yeah. So you got to feel what it was like to be MODOK.
Yes. That's really what I was going.
That's for, really like. What the experience was.
What's funny though, is I always think like whenever you go somewhere, like how you present yourself, people have, because we do it when we see somebody come. Like you have an image in your head of what that person is.
Yeah, right.
And I present myself very like rednecky.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I walked into this place, and they are all just like chilled out hippie dudes.
Yeah, like dispensary workers.
Yeah, dude. And I walk in with a MODOK t-shirt, a Phillies hat, and a camo shirt or coat on. I'm just like, I'm here to do it.
Throw me a one of them gosh darn tanks. Those guys
just like, I think he's going to shoot us.
throw me one of those gosh darn tanks. Get me in there. That's awesome.
It was a good time though, yeah.
That's a cool experience. No, I got to try that sometime.
Trying new things, Mike, in my old age.
And you probably can't read comic books in there though, because they get wet and soggy.
No, that was a disappointment. I am behind on my comic reading, so
you're like, this is an hour I could have been reading comics.
Yeah, to waste an hour just floating there, like
just
what the floating.
Fuck? I just floated for an hour. I could have read. All right, we got a great interview today, so let's just dive right in, Chris.
Let's go.
So this is really funny because I read this news this morning, had no fucking clue that. I mean, we've had such a big space in like with the jumble of the Invincible animated show. I didn't even notice this. And I don't know if
I meant to go back and like listen to see. And I,
because I really
I don't have time for that. I'm floating in tanks, Mike.
Yeah, you're floating. You can't go back and look for shit. So basically, you know, part two of Invincible season two, everybody is underway. The latest episode we learned about D.A. Sinclair has been recast. And originally it was Ezra Miller, who I completely forgot. Ezra Miller. You know, Ezra had some controversy with him over the last year. We don't need to get back into it, but Amazon decided to, you know, move forward with the character having Eric Bauza voice the character. He also was the choice to recast Ezra Miller as a character Jimmy Pesto in Bob's Burgers, which I also didn't know he was in Bob's Burgers. But it seems to be when you're in a situation where it's just a voice, you could really drop them in and nobody wants to deal with controversial shit, or if you're being a jerk, it's gonna happen.
You know, just don't kidnap people.
Yeah, just don't kidnap people. Don't start cults, you know. No, but honestly, like I said, I did not even realize, Chris, I've been watching this part two right along. It wasn't some jarring thing that what I saw when D.A. Sinclair speaks. I didn't even realize.
So I read this news before I watched the episode. So I had the opposite
of
you. And I still didn't notice the difference.
Okay, so we're on the same page here.
I'm guessing this Eric guy is like doing. I'm guessing he's like a good sound alike.
Yeah,
that, or I just don't remember what season one was.
Yeah, and D.A. Sinclair was like, probably not that. I mean, he's not that prominent in season two.
No, but so, I mean,
yeah.
It looks like he's gonna be prominent here in the future based on what happens in the episode. But
there's so many friggin' storylines going on. We'll talk about it in a second.
Yeah. It's interesting. And like you said, when it comes to cartoons, to be fair, I still haven't watched the new season of Rick and Morty, but like that was the one where I was like, I don't know if you can replace him. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, like that's literally what voice actors do. So a replacement voice actor is not that. I mean, I don't want to say not that difficult. It's much easier to do than it would be to like, Ben Affleck did something bad. Let's replace him. Who looks like Ben Affleck?
Yeah, who looks like Ben Affleck? Or like The Witcher, case in point. Henry Cavill didn't want to do it anymore, so we have a discount.
Yeah, it's much more jarring in live action. Yeah. So.
For sure. And we'll talk about it. Invincible Season 2, Episode 7, watched it. A lot of things are happening. And the, you know, this is episode where, I mean, the whole relationship with Mark and Amber really falls apart. You know, it's not sustainable. He's a superhero. He's the best superhero completely. His power level, I mean, we really understand that people rely on him. As powerful as he is, he's, you know, they need him. But he still can't come toe-to-toe with a Vulturemite, which we get in this episode. It's awesome fight. With a kaiju, Chris? You got Vulturemite, Invincible, and Kaiju in one episode. I was like, fuck yeah.
Dude, I was thinking of you real hard because...
They're like, there's a Kaiju off the coast. I was like, yes!
Well, that scene happened. A Kaiju comes. I'm like, oh, Mike's loving this. And then it gets real DBZ real fast.
Yeah, and then then they start fighting, like punching each other through mountains and shit. I was like, man, this episode was made for me.
She just appears behind him. Yeah. And I'm just like, somebody was watching Dragon Ball Z,
man. Oh, hell yeah.
And I love it.
How about there's a lot of fourth wall breaking in this episode where they start off at a Comic-Con. And they're like, these are all the funny shots and secrets we do with animation versus like comic book. And it was like, you know, hiding the voice the comic book artist is talking about animation, they're doing all those scenes in the scene, which is amazing.
Yeah, I forgot to look it up before the show. So I love that whole mocking of like how we get around animation stuff and everything. Mm-hmm. I wanted to know if that voice was Kirkman.
It was
that'd be hilarious.
I looked it up because I looked it up. It wasn't Kirkman. I think he was trying to look like Kirkman for sure, but I don't think they got him to voice it.
Yeah, but it's so funny because they're pointing things out, and it was one of those like those moments where the glass shatters in the background. You're like, fuck.
Yeah,
I can never unsee it.
I know. And the whole episode, you're looking at these like wide shots and like shots of people's back of their heads. I'm like, wow, they really just gave away the secret sauce.
Yeah. One where they're like, we do the wide shot, but nothing's moving, but you think it's moving. And I'm like, oh my God.
It really reminded me of the scene in Mallrats where they're at the con talking about inking. That's really what it reminded me of. Fantastic. They're starting to change some stuff up with the comic, Chris, which is fine. You know, there's a lot of timelines we can go through here. They didn't include the whole controversial. Well, this happens way later in the series too, where Mark gets like raped by the Vulturemite. That remember that whole controversial issue where she shows up and like
man rape.
Yeah, that's which is like that whole scene. I was like, are they really going to get into this? I'm like, I don't think we need to see that, but she just beats the shit out of him.
I think that's later though.
It is later, but I didn't know if it was the same character. Was it the same character?
I think so.
Okay. So we'll find out, but we get to see Alan's power level now.
Yeah. He's definitely over 9,000.
Yeah. It's over 9,000. This is a very DBZ episode. which was awesome.
Yeah, that was funny because I think the last episode that he talked about how like they beat the once again very Dragon Ball Z like they beat the shit out of me and I came back and I was stronger than ever.
Saiyans
work.
Yep.
And in this one they really pound it home because he gets punched and he's thinking in his head like, oh, like that hurt real bad last time and this time it didn't hurt so bad.
Now I'm doing okay. And he gets captured on purpose, hopefully to save Mark's dad.
Yeah, plays possum.
Yeah, which is great. So many things going on. I mean, we see D.A. Sinclair is being held at the like the Pentagon area to make the zombie invincible robots. Mm-hmm. And then Angstrom Levy at the end of the episode has Mark's mom and brother hostage. So there's so much shit going on. He loses Amber, you know. He gives up in the fight. Well, he doesn't give up, but he kind of like has to give up in the fight because he's still nowhere close to being able to fight a Vulturemite, you know?
Okay. Basically stand down and let her escape. Yeah, it's gonna be funny because last episode we had the whole thing of like, you need to come help the Planetary Alliance,
right?
The Vulturemites. Now the Vulturemites on Earth, so now it's gonna be Mark going back.
Yep.
There's, like you said, there's so many storylines going on, but while you're watching it, at no point do you feel like overwhelmed by
anything happening. It's just a lot. Like they're touching on all these things, and you're like, oh yeah, that's still happening. Yeah, that's still happening. So
yeah, and we can. I can almost guarantee you at this point, like when this season's over, it's going to be the Vulturemites coming to Earth and we're going to start the Vulturemite War.
I hope so.
For season three. For like,
sure. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. There's so much good going on here. I'm really excited. Like the whole Amber relationship, I understood it happening, especially in the comics. Like, you know, he's a teenager. He falls in love with this girl, blah, blah, blah. But I liked afterwards when like he finally is just like, we can't do this because it felt high school-y. We're like, oh, we got to stay together, even though like it's so obvious to everybody, like it's not gonna fucking work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then when he gets with I won't even say it, but when he gets with who he gets with later on, I like that relationship way better because that's more of a mutuals. Does. Yeah,
that's what everybody wants. I mean,
so it was kind of bittersweet because I'm like, this is a really touching moment where they're like, she realizes I can't fucking be a part of this anymore. At the same time, in my head, I'm like, yes.
The way they handled it, though, like they were really trying. And then like they have this traumatic event where it's like, yeah, this lady was about to crush her skull in her hand. Like,
yeah, I mean, that was I can imagine that being traumatic, too.
Like, that was wild. So loving the show, loving the season. Great show. X-Men 97 episode 3. I haven't watched any of this yet, but
yeah, so I'll do the short version. Like that Jean Grey that showed up at the end of episode 2,
double Jean Grey.
So that was the real Jean Grey. The one we've had all in the first two episodes was a fake Jean Grey. She was a clone. Beast
Returns. Scott Summers has been banging a clone.
Yeah, he had a kid with a clone.
That's why I see all these memes popping up on the internet of like Scott looking at Jean Grey, not knowing which one he banged.
Yeah. This episode had a lot of good stuff. So, like, Mike, I'll test your X-Men knowledge a little bit.
Okay.
So, clones. Who do you think's involved?
Is it Colonel Stryker?
Mr. Sinister.
Okay.
Mr. Sinister is the big bad.
Okay.
He wanted to get, so he took Jean Grey away, cloned this new Jean Grey, and basically put a trigger in her where he could take control.
Oh.
Because he needed the mutant baby of Scott Summers and Jean Grey, who is Nathaniel Summers, who is Mike.
No clue, Chris.
Oh my god, it's Cable.
Oh shit, it's Cable. Well, that's a crazy. Yeah, okay, that's even crazy. I didn't know Cable was the son of them.
Yeah, comes from the future. So yeah, so he gets the baby, and then Mr. Sinister takes the baby. Uh-huh. They're able to like get the clone Jean Grey to like snap out of it. They go to save the baby, but by this point, Mr. Sinister's already injected him with the technovirus.
Oh shit.
So the baby's like fucked. They got Bishop here the whole time, and they're like, you know, it comic book shit.
Yeah.
Beast at that moment's like, whoa, what do you know? I just finished fixing Bishop's time band that I've been working on for 8 seasons now.
Wow. Of course he did.
And so Bishop takes Nathaniel into the future to try to see what's going on. So 100% we're getting Cable.
Oh, that's like awesome.
At some point.
That's awesome.
Which I always like Cable. Like,
yeah, I thought he's cool.
Yeah. And we get Mr. Sinister, who was always like a villain I enjoyed in that cartoon just in general. And then like the real Jean Grey is back. The fake Jean Grey decides to like go off and figure out who she is. Mm-hmm. And it creates this dynamic of like, they don't know whose memories are whose.
Oh, interesting.
And when they were taken away, so now like Scott and her's relationship is all fractured. Oh, and whatnot.
Yeah,
there's a lot of cool stuff going on. It's
that's awesome.
This, I think the first two episodes were good. This episode was great.
Awesome.
I really enjoyed this episode. So,
Delicious and Dungeon episode 13, which I watched, where shit hits 11 and. So all the fun, happy go lucky Delicious and Dungeon is gone. And this is real. Like the Empire Strikes Back of Delicious and Dungeon, right? So we know the whole blood magic thing. The mad mage shows, or the person that works for the mad mage of the dungeon shows up. After we just resurrect the main character's sister. I don't know any of the character names really, except for Senshi, the dwarf.
Because he's the best.
Because he's the best. And they essentially this, like, they're a mage themselves, I think, right? Some sort of mage.
Yeah, they were using some ancient magic because the elf woman recognized it during the battle.
And because they used the dragon to resurrect her and the dragon works for the mad mage, they were able to control the sister and be like, okay, well, now you're going to go report back to the mad mage. Meanwhile, the orcs show back up and they need to, like, it's weird because they don't do what you think. They do the typical RPG thing is like, listen, we're going to have to fight another boss. So let's go back to town, you know, resupply, and then we'll head back out. And that's, like, to me, this is like the end of the campaign, like chapter one, right? So if you've ever played an RPG or D&D with your friends, this is like, okay, we killed the first boss, let's go regroup, you know, buy some shit, and then go back in the dungeon.
Yeah, and I'm interested to see how where it goes, because the halfling seems to be like, don't go back. I get it's your sister and all, but, like, it's a lost cause. And I wonder if he's going to book it, and maybe we get new party members.
Yeah, new party members would be cool. Yeah.
So I'm really interested to move forward with it.
So if they leave, I could see that red-haired person showing up.
Yeah. Enjoying what was
barbarian?
She? Barbarian? Yeah, some sort of barbarian.
Yeah.
And it also was, it was a cool moment because, I mean, this is a very serious episode, and probably, like, because I was enjoying it for its fun lightheartedness, it's probably like my least favorite episode.
Right.
But at the same time,
it's good. It's still a good episode.
It's still really good. And it almost resets the whole show to be like, oh, we gotta go back to town so that we can go back into the dungeon and, like, cook new food while we go on this adventure again. So I'm really interested to see where it goes, but Delicious and Touch is so good, man.
Yeah, I know. It really is. I almost wonder if this is like a stopping point for a while. Like, I don't know. We're 13 episodes in. I'm not sure how many episodes are supposed to go.
I thought it was supposed to go like some ridiculous amount.
Oh, maybe it's 26 episodes then?
Let's see.
Because I guess, well, some animes have gone over 20 for one season, or unless they take a break in the middle of the season.
But season one episode length.
Well, either way, I mean, it's if people are gonna jump on, like, this is a stopping point for sure at episode 13.
I think we're getting to it seems like 24 episodes.
Okay, so we're at like the halfway point of season one then.
Yeah,
but all right, overall still a good show.
Yeah, great show. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, loving it. Video game news, everybody. We don't get to talk about this a lot. So Marvel Games announced a new 6v6 hero shooter by the name of Marvel Rivals. Chris is going to pull up the trailer without any audio here, but take a look at it. I haven't seen anything about this. Is it a first-person shooter, Chris?
Third person. So
okay.
It gives me Smite.
Okay. Vibes. Yep. Yeah, so Smite is like a mobile battle arena, right?
Was that I saw it on Xbox and everything, but
yeah, so Smite is like third person, but it plays like a League of Legends where it's like 5v5, 6v6. Okay, so yeah, I do. Oh, that's pretty cool the way they have it. Like, you can play as Hulk, and this is a gameplay trailer for sure. So this looks like a lot of fun, Chris.
I am actually really down for this. I think they got a cool cast of characters. The guy I really expect. I mean, here's Spider-Man, Groot.
I mean, the levels look just like Overwatch, for sure.
Yeah, like, I get Smite vibes because of the third person.
Yeah.
But I do think they're going for an Overwatch.
Oh, for sure. It's a very similar, like, color palette. But so
this is where it gets interesting, because we got magic here. Like,
is that a big sword user? Who the hell's that?
Magic.
Oh, that is Magic. Yeah. Okay. And the Rocket Raccoon and Groot. Yeah. Oh shit.
So like team up stuff.
That's really cool. So you got Iron Man blasting people.
May this Parker, is... Hulk.
Yeah. Hulk
obviously smashes a lot. Doctor Strange. Doctor
Strange opening portals. Obviously an area of effect. Yeah, this looks really cool. I mean, yeah, they're very similar to like how it looks like a lot of similar abilities to Overwatch, like transporting and tanks and DPS.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And Mike, if you don't think I'm maining Namor, you'd be
wrong. I was going to say, you have Namor throwing tridents at people. It's amazing. That's a really cool idea. Closed alpha begins May, everybody, so you can sign up.
I'm interested to see if I'm guessing it's a free-to-play game.
Yeah, or PC probably only.
Maybe. I doubt it's going to be PC only.
Yeah, they have to do consoles too, right?
I'm pretty sure they announced it for everything.
That's going to be huge. It's going to be super popular.
So yeah, it's NetEase making it.
I can't imagine it's not going to be like so many people are. If they do it right, if they do the launch right and release it well, like they don't do any of the no-nos that people have been doing lately making games.
Well, I'm sure there's going to be some ridiculous, you know, microtransactions.
Oh, of course, especially.
I guess they did only announce it for PC, so yeah, it looks like PC only for right now. But it's got it. Yeah, you can't keep something like that on PC. You got to
No, for sure.
Because I'm sorry, this isn't League of Legends where I can see it staying on PC because it needs to be played that way.
I don't know if Smite can be played on a console, but I've only ever seen Smite on a PC.
Smite 100% is on a console.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
I just don't play enough console to know.
Xbox. Yeah, it was on. It was on the Xbox One.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So it could eventually go to a console.
Oh, and, yeah. And Mike, just so you know, new crossover with Slipknot for Smite.
Wait, what? How does that work?
I don't know.
Smite's about gods, anyways. But
yeah, I could see building your initial audience on PC,
mm-hmm.
and then maybe like next year saying, here's the Xbox, PlayStation version.
No, it looks really cool, though.
Yeah. So.
All right, everybody, we're going to jump to this interview with Mark Maia, and we'll see you all on the other side.
All right, everybody, we've got another very special guest for y'all. Everybody, please welcome to the show, Mark Maia. Welcome, Mark.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time out of your Easter Sunday. Oh, there you go. Nice.
Finger puppets.
Yeah, finger puppets. Very festive for the day. I mean, we can just sit here and do that. We don't have to talk. I don't care.
Yeah, we'll just do a puppet show. Like, I'm surrounded by, like, I got a bunny.
Oh, nice. There you go.
I'm just surrounded by Easter things. I got a bunch of crayons for my kid that was coloring in his
The one thing I miss about Easter is the every year, no matter what basket we got, always came with that really crappy, like, paddle ball that would break after, like, an hour. They always mass produce those around Easter time. You'd have a wooden paddle with the rubber ball, and I'd like play with it, and it'd snap within the hour. And I'm like, man, I kind of miss getting one of those.
I was so bad at that. I never played with it long enough for anything to snap.
I think I wasn't good either. I would just like rip it off and throw it or some shit. But
I snapped way before that cord ever did. I was like, fuck this, and just gone
out of here.
So,
see, I was a weird kid because we got that basket full of candy and everything, but I just wanted the hard boiled eggs.
Yeah, that's weird, dude.
Like, that was like the only time a year mom made hard boiled eggs. And I fucking love hard boiled
eggs. Like, oh man, who wants Cadbury eggs when there's hard boiled eggs?
Yeah, man. Gotta get that protein, baby.
I come from an old school, like, European Portuguese family. So they didn't do anything for Easter other than I think they donated money. And so any cool kid things as a kid, whatever school did.
Uh-huh.
So I never did. My parents never did anything for them. There was never Easter egg hunts.
Yeah.
My ex, she had two boys, and like the whole thing with that was like, for me, Easter was like, you got the basket. We had a ham dinner. There was hard boiled eggs. Like, that was Easter.
That was it.
She had this whole thing about like, well, you gotta get presents for Easter. And it blew my fucking mind, dude. I'm like, I gotta get presents for this thing. I get presents for that thing. When do the presents end? Not to mention that everybody's birthday was an Easter. Both the kids and her birthday were an Easter.
I think the best part about Easter is you don't have to wrap the gifts. You just put them in a plastic bag. Yeah,
I was like, when do the presents stop?
No, never. They never stop. Never,
I felt like Jerry Seinfeld for a minute. Like, come on.
All right, Mark. Thanks for being here. We don't need to talk about Easter all day, but
it's just the Easter podcast.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we're gonna talk about so-called living in a second here, but we need to know your origin story for comics because this is your first time in the show. And we got to put you through that stupid gauntlet. Of how you got into comics.
How I got into comics?
Yeah.
Well, this being my first story, it's a short story. Yeah. I've always wanted to I started collecting comics since I was 13. And I've always wanted to get into comics. When I first started, I thought I'd get in as an illustrator, but sequential art wasn't really my thing. And so I kind of gave up on that dream. But I gave up on that when I was 15 years old, never thinking that comics was something I could actually do because I didn't think I could do it. I just didn't think that was a job that normal people got. I thought that mm-hmm. was just like, oh, there's comic book writers. It's a different class of people. Like there's, yep. you know, there's actors and comic book people and billionaires, whatever. People, I was like, I'm just not in those. I'm not in those groups. It's not going to happen for me.
Leo DiCaprio, Elon Musk, Jason Aaron. Yep.
So anyways, I gave up on that for a while. Then I thought, oh, maybe I'll try it as a writer. And then I wrote a script, like So-Called Living. I actually wrote the script for it like 15 or 16 years ago.
Wow.
And I tried to get an artist, but the way I tried to get an artist before was like, I have a lot of artist friends that are artists. So I was like, do you want to just do something together? And a lot of them said yes. And then they bow out. So I was like, okay, let me try a different way to do this. I'll change the split on this. Basically, if the comic book that we make makes any money, I'll take the first bit to get me to zero. Like I'll cover the cost of printing. So I just take enough back to cover the cost of printing. Mm-hmm. And then the first like $5,000 it makes is all yours. And then from then on, we split the profits 50-50. And they were like, yeah, sure, let's do that. And then they did for a while and they stopped because all the people I knew to ask, they were full-time artists. And then at night, they didn't want to go home and do it again. Like they want a break. So that always fell through. So then I put the script away for like 15 years. Mm-hmm. And then I decided, you know what, I'm just going to treat this as like an employer-employee venture. I'm just going to go out, look for artists, find a portfolio I like, the artist that fits my story. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to pay them outright, have them sign a contract saying like, everything you do, I own the story, I have the rights to everything, and I pay you. The thing mm-hmm. is, you're guaranteed getting paid as an artist, which is great. And there's benefit to that, obviously. So I was like, you're going to get paid. So whether the books makes anything or not, it doesn't matter. Right now, the book's not making anything. It gets funded.
Right.
But still, it hasn't made enough for me to cover the cost that I've sunk into it already.
Mm-hmm.
So, that was the deal. And that worked out. And that's where I found Marco Leona, who does the illustrations.
And up until that point, I mean, what were you working on before comics? I mean, you had writing experience and stuff like that?
I was working in the video game industry for 24 years.
Oh, wow.
So okay. I did everything in the video game industry except for programming and mm-hmm. music. So like I did background painting, animation, story writing, video game design. I was a creative director and art director for the majority of my career.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a lot of that. And then again, I fell into that because video games is another thing I thought. I was like, I don't know how real people get that job. But a buddy of mine got a job in the video game industry. And they were like, do you know any animators? And they're like, well, he was like, well, I only know one that I would recommend. So mm-hmm. they called me.
Yep.
And they said they hadn't come down for a 2-day trial. I did. And then they offered me the job right away.
Wow.
So I was like, oh. Okay, cool. So then I've been in the industry ever since. So it's been like 24 years.
So Mike and I are big game fans. So
yeah.
What have you worked on that we might know about?
Well, I was gonna drop the name Destroy All Humans because that's a pretty big
one. Oh, you worked on Destroy All Humans?
We did the mobile game for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was before iPhone, so it was for the Razer.
Wow, that's for the Razer. Oh my god.
Or like Sony Ericsson's, whatever.
Holy crap.
So we did that. I did, well, we were, I also worked on Battlefield 2 and Battlefield Vietnam. So those are big titles.
Okay. Cool, yeah.
We designed, again, before iPhone, we designed 24. Actually, I designed 24, I wrote it, and I did all the art for the mobile game for 24.
That's and crazy.
It won a BAFTA.
Wow. The mobile game.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So awesome. That was good. And then the articles for it, like IGN, I think gave it a, I can't remember which one because we did part one and two, but one of them they gave a 9, the other one they gave a 9.2. And for the first one, they said, oh, this is how you do a video game based on an IP.
Yeah, great.
So, and we did it in like 4 months.
Wow.
And the writers of 24 got all the credit for the script, which they didn't do. I did. So,
oh my God.
That was nice.
Yeah.
The publisher who was about to get fired if we didn't do a good job on this because he screwed the pooch on the project.
Oh, no.
And I can tell this now because he's a bit of a dick. So if he's watching this, he knows.
Amazing.
He took the credit for everything. He'd be on articles being like, yep, this is the game I've always wanted to do. I was like, you're such a lying piece of shit.
Oh, no.
I was like, the game you wanted to do back when phones were like flip phones were your bet latest and greatest the game they had a document for was something that the Xbox at the time couldn't have pulled off.
Oh, wow.
So I was what they had like real-time streaming events and cases uploading. I was like, What phone are you working on?
What are you going to be playing? Are you from the future? Because that's not going to run on shit. That's wild,
Me and the programmer, we looked through the original doc, and he's like, because after we made the pitch and I had to fly over to LA, talk to the guys at Fox, convince them to let us do it because this guy's already screwed up by letting another studio do it. And me and the programmer are looking through the document. He's like, hey, read this. Is there anything you could do on this? And we're reading it in the office together, on our computers. We're just outright laughing, being like, what is this? What is this live action streaming video? When has this guy ever seen this happen?
That's wild.
That would have been brutal. Anyways.
And on the other side of that, I mean, you know, doing the research on you, you have a board game channel, right? Yeah. So you're pretty passionate about all that stuff. If you want to talk about that a little bit before we jump into comment.
Yeah, I have a board game channel called Board Game Coffee, and it specializes in how to play videos, review videos, previews, playthroughs, etc., some unboxings. And I've been doing that for about 6 years, I think. And it started off because I wanted to design, because although I'm a video game designer, I don't come at it from a programmer, so I don't know how to program my own games.
Mm-hmm.
I work with programmers. So I write the documents, tell them what to do, and they do it. And I sit beside them and we're like, okay, tweak this, tweak that, tweak this, tweak that.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to board games, I thought, hey, I could design a board game on my own because I can make my own prototype components, design my own mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
So I started doing that. And then my wife was like, hey, let's do a channel where you teach people how to play board games. And I was like, no. I don't want to do it. I was like, I don't want to do it because I don't want the attention. I didn't like that constant, like, people are watching you directly.
Right.
So it took me a while to get used to that. And one day I was listening to a podcast and they were like, if you want to get into board games, you want to fund on Kickstarter, then you're going to have to get into the community. And then one day she comes home again. She's like, hey, let's do this. And I was like, all right, I need to get into the community. So put the board game aside, start out Board Game Coffee. And I never went back to the board game design again. I want to. So, but I haven't done it yet because now that I've got a name in the community, it might help the Kickstarter.
Yeah, right. I mean, I'm looking at your Board Game Coffee channel and it's super popular. There's some games on there that I've been looking to play that I haven't had the time to learn. I play a lot of different TCGs and stuff like that. So that's really cool to see that it's really taken off and you have a pretty big following. So that's awesome.
Yeah. And it's interesting because the following has been growing more since I've put out less content in the last like 2 months. Because I was burnt out. I did, if you look at last few videos, well, I've put out some since, but there was, I put out like 6 how to plays for Mythwind. And then I put out 2 how to plays for Tenaris. And those were pretty much back to back. So it was like 8 how to play videos. Mm-hmm. And they were these huge games, super in depth. And I put a lot of work into our how to play videos. If you look at them, there's a lot of animations, there's special effects, there's transitions, there's a lot of work. It's not just me talking in front of a table.
Yep.
And by the time I was done those, I was like, I am burnt out. And I had to get this done before Christmas or December, because once December hits, it's like, it's birthdays. You said around Easter time was a lot of birthdays for you. December is, I'm eating like 3 birthday cakes a week. And And then there's Christmas, and then there's like my Christmas at my wife's family, and she's got like two, cause her parents separated, so there's mm-hmm. two families.
Oh yeah.
And then we have to come to Toronto for my family, and it's a 20 person core.
Yeah.
So there's always 20 people. Uh-huh. It's a huge family, so there's plenty more, but everybody had to segregate because we couldn't do it. It would be 300 people at every event.
That's wild.
So it's done. Yeah. So December starts and my years are right off.
Yeah.
So I can't get anything done.
Well, that's awesome. I mean, congrats. It's a lot of work. I know how in-depth those games are, like Mythwind, especially Frosthaven, those types of games. So to like make the content, to play them, teach them, and then edit all that stuff, it's quite a bit of time.
Yeah.
And I got a toddler.
Yeah, that's quite a bit of time. All right, so we're gonna get into the comics now. So-Called Living is on Kickstarter right now. It's hit its funding goal, but for sure, I mean, it has almost a month to go still. So congrats on that. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it hit it in like about 30 hours, which was exciting. 33 hours on that.
Not bad for your first Kickstarter.
Yeah.
And Mike, I wanted to just read this little piece from the Kickstarter, mm-hmm. and you tell me if you think I was going to back this book or not.
Okay.
So-Called Living is a dark comedy.
It's like the rabbit speaking to us.
That takes place in a reality where vampires, werewolves, zombies, and us normies coexist in a world much like our own. Just end there. Am I backing this book?
Yeah, for sure. That's right up Chris's alley. Those are like the three main monsters he loves. So give us the rundown. I know you talked about how you had the script for a long time, but what is this story about?
Yeah. So, the world exists in, like you said, it's a world where, like, what if the vampires, werewolves, and zombies kind of lived among us, right? Mm-hmm. And not in hiding. They live among us as part of our everyday lives. And it's not an apocalypse. So we've adapted. We've grown with them. We've known. So there are vampires, but they're still vampires. They still follow vampire rules. They still want to suck your blood. They still. Mm-hmm. But then there's others that, you know, they're like, they're good to just, like, go to the bar and order like blood shots or whatever and not have to kill people. But there's obviously the ones that do, because there's humans that do things they're not supposed to do either.
Right.
But the personality of these creatures and how we respond to them is different because we've grown up in a world where they always existed. Mm-hmm. So our societies kind of grew in parallel. So there's not this like, oh my God, it's a vampire. It's like, oh, it's a vampire. They might be dangerous. That's true. But coming across a vampire in the alleyway would be like coming across some like gangbanger in an alleyway. You're like, mm-hmm. you got to make the judgment call. Do you think you can take them? Do you just going to play it cool? Like, you're not frightened a little bit. And then there's racism that they deal with, where there's just some people that are against werewolves or against vampires because it's just they're against those type of people or beings. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And our story, and I'll tell you the get into the first book. The first book starts, Jack starts off as a human, and he gets turned into a vampire, and then his life is amazing to begin with. And he's just an average Joe. Right, mm-hmm. He's cool amongst his friends. He's not a standout type of person, but he gets turned into a vampire. Now he's got to adapt to this new way of living as a vampire. So the first thing that happens to him is it starts off mundane things that he has to deal with, like I can't get into my apartment complex because there's like a no vampire clause, and if you're not invited in, then you can't go in.
Oh yeah, you have to invite the vampire. Yeah.
So he can't get into his own apartment. So he's a homeless vampire. That's the first that's the first problem he comes across.
That's awesome.
So like, you can read the first book for free. There's a link on the Kickstarter page. It'll take you right there.
Wow.
Because I wanted to give people a sense of like what the world is like, what I'm like as a writer, and give sense of the characters. Mm-hmm. And the first book is pretty tame. And then the second book introduces a bunch of other characters, and it leaves off on like Jack is going to get in over his head. Jack's our main character. He's our human. So his little mundane issues where he thinks, now I got to adapt to being a vampire. My life's all turned upside down. What do I do? And then there's this subplot happening in the background that he's totally unaware of, but he's the focus of. which you start seeing a bit of that in issue two, which that's cover for issue two in the center there, actually, with his head on fire.
Oh, yeah.
In the background
there. Nice.
So, yeah, these are the first few pages of issue one. And I think it's the first five pages. And at the bottom of that, there's a link where you can go read the rest of issue one.
That's very cool.
And the Kickstarter is for issues one and two.
That's awesome. So, yeah. And what you're off, let's just talk about the back, the rewards that you have for people. You have some standard covers. You have some variant covers, elite mm-hmm. covers, sex pot covers. So
obligatory. They're obligatory sex pot editions.
Yeah. Obligatory. and I just a shout out to the artist. He said it was Mark Leone.
Mark Leone.
And he said he started working with him. Just give him a shout out for those awesome covers too.
Marco Leone is awesome.
Yeah.
And so yeah, I'll take you through. And if you notice, there's a bunny motif throughout the whole page. Mm-hmm. You notice the perimeter. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there, bunnies are hinted at in the first book. And that's something that's new and different for people to. That's kind of like the big surprise. In mm-hmm. the beginning, you're going to read the first two books. And you're like, what's with the bunnies?
Mm-hmm.
You don't know much about the bunnies as a reader, but you get the sense that people in the world very much know about the bunnies and the problem with the bunnies.
Okay.
So that's another story that's happening along Jack's. So eventually they will converge. But mm-hmm. These are the elite covers. So the elite covers are produced by the first variant, the one that's purple and it's got Jack running toward us.
Mm-hmm.
That is drawn by Derek Loffman, who's a friend of mine, and he's done work for Marvel. He's designed toy lines. He's got a huge following on Instagram. If you look at Derek Loffman, he's done a lot of stuff. He's designed I don't know if you ever saw those. They're like little chibi toys.
Mm-hmm.
They're like Captain America. You pop their heads down and the eyes switch.
Yeah.
Yes.
He designed that line of toys.
Oh, that's really cool. Wow.
So he's done a lot of stuff for like a lot of big IPs, and he's a friend of mine. And he lives in London, Ontario, which is where I live now.
Nice.
And so he drew that cover for me. And then the other cover, which is actually a shot of Toronto. That is a guy I've known since he was 10. And he is a very popular photographer in Toronto, and he goes by Ashton Techno, but mm-hmm. his full name is Ashton Prasad. So Ashton Techno Prasad, I think, is what I credit him as. But he's got an Instagram following that's pretty popular as well. He gets flown out to Paris and New York for galleries to take photographies of their cities, and he's really good. So
that's a real photograph cover?
Yeah, that's a real photograph cover.
It almost like I almost didn't. The way the color is and the lighting, you almost can't tell, like looking at it. Yeah, it's a really cool idea to put that.
And because I figured since like Toronto's my hometown, it's mm-hmm. where I am right now, I wanted to kind of pay homage and also at the same time kind of share Ashton's work because he's a fantastic photographer.
Mm-hmm.
So. And that's one of those things, like, I'm sure somebody's done it before, but I can't think of anybody that's done a photo cover before. So it's kind of cool.
Which is, it's really cool. And then we have the sex pot covers, which I'm actually interested in because I see you do comment on one of the covers you made generating with AI that you edited and stuff like that. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So the first cover... for the variant for issue one, which is the one that's clearly not hand drawn.
Yeah.
That is that's the one I used AI for. I can't remember the name of the system I used, but it was mm-hmm. like a service I paid for, and it's a little more than just like text generated.
Mm-hmm.
I imported photos I took of like girls in poses, mm-hmm. and then I chopped it up, included drawings. So basically, I made this hodgepodge thing of like drawings of mine, photos I took,
like a Frankenstein.
Yeah. Yeah. So and then you pump it. You pump all this information into your system of like photos I used, mm-hmm. drawings I did, and it pumped out this.
Okay.
This image. Wow. And so if you the reason behind these, that's why it has a badge that says obligatory sexpot edition.
Yeah.
If you look at Kickstarter, it's most of the best funding comics are like sexy comics.
Oh, we know. Yeah, we've talked about this all the time. Yeah.
So I was like, and I was talking to my wife, and I was like, I was like, I'm studying. I studied like what web pages do, like what Kickstarter pages with that do well. What do they look like? How many tiers do Kickstarter pages have? And I'm not just looking at comics.
Yeah.
And then I'm looking at comic, but I am looking specifically at comics for like what kind of books fund. And I'm seeing so much of the funding is for sexy books. And I'm like, wow, we have a good story. We have a good solid story. I'm confident in that. But we do not have a sexy story.
Right.
We have great characters. But the sexy part of it, I was telling my wife, I was like, I don't know what we're going to do. Then it clicked in. I was like, we're going to take it. If you've ever gone to a con and you'll see like girls dressed up as like sexy Mario or sexy Luigi or sexy SpongeBob.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. So we took that idea and we pulled Jill.
Sexy SpongeBob.
Oh, it exists, Chris. Yeah,
so, to be fair, I was at a con one time and they had sexy Mega Man and there was very confused thoughts in my head. But go ahead.
So we took two characters from either book. The first book is Jill, who you can see her actually in the first five pages if you scroll up. She's wearing like a pink top, but it's like, you know, right up to here. It's got like long sleeves. She's wearing blue jeans and she's got a ponytail. So the only thing, so what we took from that is like, okay, Jill's got a pink top, check. Mm-hmm. She's wearing denim bottoms, check. And a ponytail, check. And she orders a milkshake. So she's holding a milkshake.
Yep.
So we took that. We made a sexified version of Jill as how cosplayers would sexify Mario. So that's what we did. Mm-hmm. And we did the same thing for the other character, but this is drawn by a friend of mine called Jamie Real. Now, Jamie works in the video game industry. Fantastic artist as well. Mm-hmm. He's not used to doing sexy images. So, but I was like, hey, Jamie, I want to do a cover for me. He's like, sure.
How'd that conversation go?
And I was like, I want you to do the sex pot editions. He's like, what? And I explained to him my mentality. I was like, we need a sexy cover. And he's like, fine. He's like, figures, get me to do the sex, because he's doing it. He's got his concepts.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm struggling with this. I was like, you got this, buddy. You got this. So he took the waitress that's in book two. And he, again, the waitress, she's like up to here. Yeah. She's very like plain Jane looking. You wouldn't look at her twice.
Right.
And we sexified her and again did and put her on the cover.
And
the badge.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, the badge was a kind of tongue-in-cheek way of saying, if you want to be successful on Kickstarter, you got to have your obligatory sex bot covers.
Oh, my God. Yeah, and I was going to say that, like, you pull up Kickstarter all the time, and it's like, these are the types of covers you see on, like, the projects we love. That hundreds of thousands of dollars. But it is funny because Chris and I always have a conversation in the background, and I think we've only really had one out of the 300-something interviews. We really had one interview that was like, okay, this, you know, this person is putting these, we call them cheesecake covers, out that aren't really related to the story in somewhat of a way. And we had asked them that in an interview, and it kind of went like, oh no, I don't see that at all. These are just like great covers. And I was like, but there's definitely, you're making the money off it. But like, to hear you say that, I was like, okay, there's a realization there that like, yeah, people are just going to pay money for these covers.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to put the badge on it, because I wanted people to know, like, I am very aware of what we're doing
here. Oh, yeah, yeah, and I think it's hilarious. Yeah, I love it.
And it plays in with the, like, the humor of the book, because the humor of the book, like, it's got serious situations, but it's the way they deal with the situations, and it's very sarcastic, and they mock each other, and it's the way I talk to my friends, so it kind of rolls off the tongue.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember thinking when I saw it, because Mike and I are, we're generally not fans of like cheesecake covers or just that style of book in general. Like, I've tried a few, it's just not my thing. And when I saw this, I was like, okay, you know, par for the course, I get playing the game, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And to hear you put it that way with the obligatory stamp on it and everything, just, it almost makes me want to buy them just to be like, yeah, he gets it. And at least he's like kind of being a little punk rock about it. Yeah. And like, well, I got to do it. But, you know, it's just,
The satire of it's amazing. Yeah. I think that's the best approach. Well,
I'm glad you guys got it. Cause like, I'm sure that's a lot of people. And they're like, why the sexy covers? I was like, didn't you see the, like, just friends of mine. I was like, did you see the edge?
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, yeah, obligatory. And they just read it like it's a thing. Uh-huh. And then I've had some other friends that read it and they laugh out loud.
Oh, yeah.
Like, obligatory sex pen edition. That's because they got it. Yeah. They got it right away without me telling.
I did want to dig a little bit into that issue one cover, though. Have you gotten any backlash for the use of AI? Because I know it's a big conversation. And
not yet. I did. It's funny. I was doing ads and I used totally, and I put out ads, a bunch of ads, like 12 ads, different ads that were different images that I pulled from the comic and I spliced them together. And then one ad, I was like, I want just a person sitting on a bus reading this casually, or like a subway, reading the comic book casually. I wanted to do kind of like, but I had no comic books to use. So I was like, oh, I'll just get some stock photography of somebody sitting down. I'll put it in their hand. And I couldn't find anybody reading anything that wasn't like a novel or that was in a setting that I wanted. So I was like, I'm just going to go ChatGPT and go like, woman sitting on bus or subway reading a comic. And I got it. So I was like, okay, I photoshopped my comic book into there. I put it out, put the so-called living on it. And everybody would just smash that ad. And I was, and they were like, why not use the art? And I was like, here's an interesting thing. I was like, I have 12 ads out for this. One of them uses AI. The AI one gets all the likes, it gets all the shares, it gets all the attention. And you commenting on it is going to make Facebook promote it even more because they don't care if the comments are bad or negative.
Right. So I was people are talking about it. Yeah.
And then people are like, well, why don't you pay an artist? I was like, I paid an artist to do the entire book. I'm broke.
Yeah.
But that's why I need Kickstarter. I was like, I Marco got paid up front for every bit of art he did. So I'd have something to put on here. Like I would have loved to fund it first and then pay him and then pay for this. But it was like, I need to show something. So I paid Marco up front. So, and I was trying to tell him, I was like, I understand, but I was like, this is a piece of artwork. That's like the ad. I was like, it's a piece of throwaway artwork. Like nobody's ever going to see it again. It's this ad run for 2 weeks and it's gone. I was like, I'm not going to pay somebody $700 that I don't have to make this ad. That's just gone. And I was like, if you think about it, you're not paying, if you pay me because that ad brought you to it, the money you're going is going to me and Marco, the actual writer and the artist. Like it's going to real people. We're just using the AI to attract people.
Sorry,
go ahead.
I just want to say, like, that backlash, it's more suited for, like, when I see the shit happening at Wizards of the Coast, you know, big companies like Blizzard, like any type of big development company that could pay an artist to do any little bit of ad work. Yeah, I understand, like, for sure they need to dish it out. But I think in your situation with the AI for an ad, like you said, for 2 weeks, and it does include the comic book art. And also at the bottom of the Kickstarter, if anybody's curious, you do have a statement about AI generated art and Kickstarter's policies on it. If people are pretty interested in reading more about that. But
and the thing is, I've told people, I was like, you don't have to buy the AI generated one. And boycotting the entire project because of one cover, I was like, well, you're still like, I still did all the writing. I did a lot of work into this. Marco did tons of work into this. I was like, you're still like negating like the stuff we did. Like that doesn't erase the amount of work we did. And I just wanted to do, because like a lot of the sexy covers around Kickstarter are AI. So I thought that kind of rolled into the whole sexy cover thing. I was like, I'll just do one. And so I actually might draw, I was thinking for books 3 and 4, I might draw my own sex pod edition and see how that goes out. So,
well, I mean, you're number one, you're not hiding it, which is always seems to be the issue with the AI stuff. Number two, and I think each, it's such a weird gray area right now that each instance has to be just looked at differently in how the art's being used and who's getting the credit, right? I think it's just such a weird area to be in right now.
It sounds to me like you used it in the correct way, which is a tool used. Like it wasn't like you, I mean, the actual cover, I know you said you went into ChatGPT for the ad, but for the cover, it's like you used it as a tool along with a bunch of work. It wasn't like you typed this in and this is what popped out.
Exactly. So, and I did that on purpose because I was like, I feel like I need to put something into this. So if people do ask, it's like, well, I did do something. So it's this combination of like me and AI working together.
Cool. Yeah, which I was listening to a bunch of people who use like Photoshop and other like people who make like some of the top creators on YouTube and everything. They're making their thumbnails and everything there. And they use these tools and they're like, well, it's not AI. And then they describe it. And I'm like, no, it's AI. Like,
it's still
just because you're not typing it into a prompt in and something comes up doesn't mean it's not AI. Like,
yeah,
we got to find this. But I was curious because, I see everybody going off about it. And it's always funny to me. And when something becomes a hot button topic, there's no nuance to the conversation. It's black and white, good and bad.
That's the tough part about it.
And not, yeah, I have like, I guess friends of mine that do run Kickstarters, and they're like, we don't like, and they're professional artists, and they're like, personally, I don't care. They're like, and especially in this situation, because it's not something like, I didn't take money away from somebody. You know what I mean? Like, I get it with big companies. You're like, you're not paying, you could be paying an artist for that. I was like, no, I couldn't.
Right.
No, I couldn't have paid an artist.
Exactly.
For it.
Yeah.
I am broke.
Yeah.
And then the idea of like, oh, well, you shouldn't do it. Then well, I should just give up on it because I'm broke and just give all the advantages to the rich people.
Right. Yeah.
No.
Like, that doesn't seem right either.
Mm. No, I totally understand the situation. Like, Chris, I think you utilized it perfectly. I mean, it is a tool out there for people to use. And why not? And I think the last, the one we haven't talked about here, the last reward is the all-in reward, which seems to be pretty popular, and that includes every cover, right?
Yeah, yeah, you get every cover. And I honestly thought the sex pot would do better than this one on its own, but a lot of people are getting the all-in.
Yeah, it seems to be the most backed, right? That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
that's so awesome.
Like, well, that's awesome. Yeah. So I guess this, you know, people are still getting the sex pot edition, but yeah, so it's great that people are supporting that. Yeah. And I also have, if you scroll down, I've got some add-ons.
Oh, very
and,
cool.
And the add-ons I used was like, and this is a tip I got from my friend who, he's a lot more successful on Kickstarter than I am. He's done them before. And where he's made up to like 85,000 on his book or whatever. So he's done well. And he suggested, because I was like, do you sign all your books? He's like, no. He's like, I put a add-on tier. If somebody, because it helps you support your book if they want it, and then you don't have to sign all your books. He's like, because that's a lot of work to just go through, because you're already organizing, you're printing out labels, you're putting them in boxes. You're like, there's a lot of, because I don't have a fulfillment center. I am my own fulfillment center. So so they said, do that. And I was like, okay, and that'll help actually like fund the project. So the add-ons are like, and like, if I'm at a show, I'll sign your book for free. I'm like, I ask you for $5. I need the $5 to help you fund this project.
Right.
And then the keychain, we actually make those keychains ourselves in our house. So they're black and white acrylic, and they're, I don't have one with me. I should have brought it. They're about that big and they're black and white acrylic. And on the back of them, it says so-called living official member of the Blood Bunny Colony. And the idea is for $8, not only do you get a cool keychain, but on future so-called living Kickstarters, I want to offer something special to people who are backers. Kind of like being a Costco member. Mm-hmm. There's going to be benefits if you're a Costco member. So I want to give some benefits to people who supported me in this project and the future projects if they got this keychain. So that means your email, whatever you back this with, and you got the keychain, your email is going to go on a list. That list is going to be like, that these are our Blood Bunny members. And then the future Kickstarter, we're going to figure out some bonus. Either you're going to get a free print, free stickers, maybe a discount, maybe a free upgrade on your package. Like, we'll figure something out to give them in addition. So you're going to get the keychain minimum. You're going to get a handmade keychain by us. And the keychain looks pretty much exactly like it does there.
Okay. That's
so
cool. Really cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And then, yeah, we just added if anybody wants additional backer levels, they could. And actually somebody bought 3 all-ins.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's so really I was cool. Like, oh, awesome.
Yeah, that's really cool. Well, Mark, I think, I mean, it's funded, but yeah, we have some additional things people can add on here that I think are really cool. I to me, it looks like the project's going to be a huge success with almost a month to go. That's amazing. I know Chris read Zombies, Vampires, Werewolves, and was like already backing him.
Yeah. And then you had it in Dark Humor, and it's like, I'm a big fan of Dark Humor, so let's go.
Is there anything else you want to say about the book before we, you know, sign off today? Or,
Well, if anybody wants to read issue 1 for free and to get an idea of my writing and the characters, go to Global Comics, just type in so-called living.
Okay.
And you'll get it there. And a lot of these, like, the Elite and the Sexpot covers are limited edition. So the only thing I'm going to be, they're limited to Kickstarter, but if I have any overrun, then those will be with me. I'll sell those at a show.
Right.
Like they'll probably never show up on Kickstarter again. They'll just be with me at a show. And I mentioned that in the bottom, I say exclusive ish. And the ish is like, if I have any extra left over after I do the print run, Because I'm doing offset printing, so they have overrun issues. So if there's like an extra 20 issues, well, I'll take those with me to a show and sell them there.
Okay.
So I just want to be as open as possible with everybody. But I'm confident you'll like it. My issue, the stress I have over this was never will people like it, is will people find it? Because there's so many things on Kickstarter.
That's true. There's a lot out there. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, and if anybody wants to follow you and your social medias and stuff, where do you want to send them for that?
Oh, well, I have two. Board Game Coffee is my board game channel, and that's YouTube and Instagram are our biggest channels, but you can look up Board Game Coffee on anything and it'll be us. Mm-hmm. And same goes for So-Called Living. We just have an Instagram right now and a Facebook page, but because I've been so busy with the Kickstarter, I haven't really done much with either of those. I want to do more with them, but I've just been so focused on making sure everything runs smooth with the Kickstarter and putting the page together.
Understandable. Yeah,
definitely. And to everybody out there watching or listening, you know the drill. There's links in the show notes down below. I'll link to the Kickstarter page, also to the free comic that you can read before you check out the Kickstarter page. So, you know, if you like it or not, that's always cool. Free comics.
Yeah.
And also to Mark's YouTube channel. So, Mark, thanks so much for taking the time today, stopping by and chatting. We appreciate it. And best of luck with the rest of the campaign, man.
You guys are awesome. Thanks for having me on. And thank you.
Thank you.
And we're back.
Oh, we're definitely back now.
We're definitely back.
Yeah, so check it out. So-Called Living on Kickstarter, everybody. It's really cool stuff. Mark's a great guy. Give him all your love.
Yeah, get those obligatory sex pot.
Yeah, conditions. I love that. He should have sold those as like stickers. That would be really funny. And then you could stick those stickers to your already cheesecake cards.
I should. My tablet's upstairs. I got a sticker from Pat Shand. It's from one of his books. And it's like one of his like sexy cover girls. Uh-huh. But she's holding a condom. Uh-huh. And it just says, come prepared, C-U-M, prepared.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing. Classic Pat Shands shit right there.
Yeah, I can't wait to have him on again so YouTube can take down the interview.
Yeah, every time. Comic news. Marvel Comics is celebrating 20 years of Scotty Young variant covers. Amazing. The celebration will come with 27 new variants by Scotty that will combine into a new poster and a new comic for their Infinity Comics line called Young Giant-Sized Little Marvels. Wow, that's a lot of comic book covers.
Yeah,
look at that. That's amazing,
bro. I am buying the fuck out of this.
So is that all of them? That's all of them combined, all the covers?
It's all the images from the covers kind of clumped together.
Okay.
It's not like the covers are gonna like create this image.
Yeah, and Scotty Young is always known for doing the best like child mini sized child versions of like heroes, and that blade in the bottom left is so good.
Yeah, like I got it's still in boxes somewhere, but like I have a few of the Scotty Young variant statues they made too, because I love these covers, man.
That's cool.
And
that's
awesome. For the longest time, I had the Avengers versus X Babies poster in my room.
Yep, I remember that poster too.
Yeah, and I immediately when I saw this, I was like, I know exactly where it's going. It's going in this room.
Yep.
And I need to get it because it's just so good.
Yeah, they're amazing, and the statues he did too are really good.
Yeah, I can't recommend them enough. But
yeah,
I'm excited. The only thing I wish is that there's a Spider Boy one here. I don't care for Spider Boy, but other than that, I'm down for everything in here. Like, dude, Moon Knight's in there, Spider Punk, Cap. Like, it's awesome.
I would, if they did the statues again, I would totally buy a Blade statue for sure.
Oh hell yeah. I'm surprised they must have not sold well, because I was shocked they didn't come back.
Yeah, they didn't do more.
Yeah, they only did a few.
All right, DC announced a new hardcover anthology titled Joker of the World. Lovely. Is that Gary Frankart? The new hardcover is similar to 2021's Batman the World, set to release September 17th. This anthology features creators from around the world like Jeff Johns, Jason Fabok, Satoshi Miyagawa, David Rubin, German Peralto, Alvaro Fong Varela, and more. If that wasn't enough for you, the story by Jeff Johns and Jason Fabek's story will be a 10-page epilogue to their controversial Three Jokers story. All right, goodbye. Next.
Dude. So I think this is a Jason Fabok
cover. Oh, it is a Fabok cover. Yeah.
Yeah.
You got a Joker anthology and you're trying to put multiverse continuity in there. Get out of here.
What's hilarious about this is they just went through retconning the three Jokers.
It's like a tug of war. I think it's a joke at this point. Like, people are trying to get him to stop, and he's like, no, we're going to do more.
I don't understand the whole Geoff Johns DC dynamic anymore.
I don't. Are they just let him do what he wants? Or is he, like, being a jerk about it? Like, what is happening over there?
Well, they let him do stuff, but at the same time, like, I've read stuff that they're, like, really pissed at him because he basically stole all their best artists and said, come work on my independent books.
Yeah, come buy these books that I'm putting out.
That are all coming out this week, everybody.
Yeah.
And then they give him this and they're like, yeah, do more three Jokers that nobody liked.
Nobody liked. Very strange. It's all very
strange. They're like, Chip, please just retcon this, please.
Maybe this was in some sort of contract, Chris, and they're like, okay, he's got to get these 10 pages done.
I think this is a so I read back in the day when EVS like went off the fucking rails.
Yeah.
But DC still had a contract that said you have to do this much content for us.
Mm-hmm.
So there was literally just them being like throwing stuff at them, being like, just finish. Yeah. So you get the fuck out the door.
Yeah. So you can leave. Yeah.
I get the distinct feeling that's what this is. They're like, fuck, you can't put anything out on time. And then you keep pitching us three Jokers. Just finish this and go to your fucking ghost machine.
Yeah. Get out of here. Go to your ghost machine. I'm not picking this up.
I didn't pick up Batman the World. So why am I going to pick up Joker the World? Like, I don't get it. And for your big promotion to be, oh, we reunited three Jokers to do more three Jokers. It's like, did you not read the fucking room, people?
They don't care. They just don't care. The fans are not asking for this. We're not asking for it.
I have yet to meet the person who likes three Jokers. So I've met one person who won't say a bad thing about it, but he won't say a positive thing about it either. So yeah, it's so weird, man.
Come on, DC, do better. Distillery announced a new title called The Big Burn. This limited series will be written by Joe Henderson, showrunner of Lucifer TV series, very popular with art by Lee Garbett. Here's the synopsis. Owen and Carly are Bonnie and Clyde of the 21st century, a smooth, slick duo who pull off impossible heists and have the time of their lives doing it. But when justice finally catches up to them, they think it's all over until the devil himself offers a deal. Their freedom for the very souls, but they soon find out without their souls, their love is missing too. So they set out to recruit a new crew of the damned for the ultimate heist, break into hell, steal their souls back. That sounds pretty dope, actually.
It sounds really dope.
They're like, oh, we're heist people? We're going to fucking break into hell, get our souls back. That sounds really cool.
I'm so down for this.
Yeah.
I was thinking, like, Distillery's another one of those publishers, like, mm-hmm.
Doing cool stuff
came out of nowhere.
Just
one day appeared on my list. Like, here's Distillery.
Yep.
Scott Snyder's doing shit for him. It kind of reminds me of Magma right now.
Yeah. Yeah. like, we got this guy. What?
Like, okay. Introducing Magma. Yeah. Here's the hive mind.
What?
I'm like, wait, what?
How did you? All right.
And they did the intro right. Like, they were comics people. I know Distillery's background a little bit better than Magma's, but like, they were comics people and they had inroads with people. So they're like, bring in Scott, bring in Tinian.
Mm-hmm.
They'll do something, build us up, and Becky at that. And then we're going to introduce new books. And so recently the books they've introduced, including this, are like people who aren't really known in the comics world, but they have cool ideas and are doing what sound like cool things. We'll see the execution of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm down for it. I'm just, like, I want more cool comics. So I'll be keeping my eye out for this one.
Yeah, definitely. This one looks cool.
Yeah.
What did we read this week, Chris? I read quite a bit.
So this should be fun.
I read the latest. Well, I'd read a lot of trades, actually. So I read the latest volume of Kaiju number 8, I believe volume 9. This is the big one where all the Kaiju, like the master villain, his plan starts to unfold and we get a lot of Kaijus showing up. So the humans are kind of pulling out their new weapons and stuff. So we're getting geared up for some huge epic battles for the next volume. So this is a fun one to see where the characters are evolving to. I I read some stuff, the Kong versus Godzilla. So we get a lot of stuff for review copies. So we got Kong versus Godzilla prequel trade that I read. That was, I believe, Titan Comics. But so it's a prequel to the Kong versus Godzilla movie. And what I have to say, Chris, is that it leaves off, like, we get all this buildup to, like, Kong doing something crazy or Godzilla doing something crazy, and then they say, go watch the movie.
So, yep.
Really fucking lame. We get a little bit of, like, the stuff they tell us about the universe, I don't give a fuck about. Like, I want to see the monsters fight. So.
Which, by the way, like, I'm guessing you haven't watched it yet. That movie snuck up on me, like, everything seems to be done.
I have not watched it, no.
I found out that Regal has a Kong versus Godzilla cup.
Oh.
In which the lid has a little Godzilla on it. So I had
no
it.
Idea. I gotta go now.
And I've read reviews, and it's either this is the masterpiece kaiju movie that you've always wanted.
Uh-huh.
Or what a pile of shit. What the fuck is this?
I have things, yeah. There's no in between. Great.
And I'm like, interesting.
This is like what all the legendary Godzilla movies have been. Like, I don't know if this was hot garbage or if I had a lot of fun watching it.
Yeah. Also, Mike, the Red Cross sent me a text message the other day.
Yeah.
And it's give blood now. Between these dates, get limited edition t-shirt. And I'm like, okay, whatever. Like, I give blood anyways. I'll do it. Yeah. And my time was up where I can actually give blood again. So I scheduled it. And then they sent me a picture of the t-shirt, and it's a Kong versus Godzilla Red Cross t-shirt.
Maybe the Red Cross is featured prominently in this movie because it's a disaster film.
What the fuck? Don't know, but I'll have to send you a picture of it. Yeah,
that's awesome.
So there's so they always say, like, not guaranteed or whatever, but like, I'm going to go in there and just be like, I want my damn Godzilla t-shirt.
Yeah, if it's going to make me want to donate blood. I've never donated blood, but I want this fucking t-shirt. That's awesome.
Tangent, sorry.
So that's all right. Now I know about a t-shirt I need. Yeah, so the trade, I wouldn't recommend it, to be honest. I mean, hey, we get review copies for a reason. It didn't float my boat, Chris. I'm a Godzilla fan, and you literally, like, this wasn't a story that elevated the movie at all. It literally cuts it off and says, go watch the movie, which is I don't think is a very good way to go about storytelling.
That's why I'm so rarely a, like, prequel or sequel to a movie comic guy.
The JSA ones were good. They were like origins of each of the characters. If you wanted that origin, they don't really talk about it in the movie. Like, that's cool.
It's not a guaranteed rule, but, like, generally I just don't mess with them.
No, I agree.
Unless it's like the sequel to Batman 89, which I end up not liking, but the sequel to Batman 89, because that'll never happen again. And it's like, well, let's just continue this. Like, that's one thing, but, like, Flash is in theaters this month. Go check out the prequel comic. I'm like, nah, I'm good.
Yep. I read a couple of Mad Cave, because they're so generous with their review issues. I read Mushroom Knight Volume 1. I'd say if you're into fantasy, a very cool book, very sword and sorcery, but, like, very trippy. It's a Mushroom Knight, so you can imagine it's very in tune with nature. I'd say the art is amazing. There's some weird stuff going on between their world and the human world. Like, this is a story of this knight carrying out a mission and, like, all of the surrounding fantasy of it. It's really cool, but it's kind of a trippy story, the overall plot, but, like, the things you get to see along the way are really cool. You would probably like it, Chris, because it almost reminds me of, like, Scorriers style.
I wanted to check that one out because I got Scorriers vibes from it.
Yeah.
Other than the amazingness that is squirrels.
Yep. Crusader Volume 1, actually probably one of my favorite books so far from Mad Cave. This is like a barbaric book, in the sense that it's brutal, but also very close to the style barbaric by Vault Comics. It's a brutal book. This crusader, like, fighting the Crusades, gets transported to another world. He has to fight this evil, and, like, he's, like, kicking ass, but there's, like, actually magic and mystery involved with this evil. He destroys it, and it comes back maybe towards the end. Really cool 4 issues. I highly recommend that book. The art's amazing too. So that's Crusader. And then I had a couple other books that I read. I read Fantastic Four number 18, North and Gomez. This is another one of those one-shot stories. We get a little more focus on Franklin Richards, the son of the Fantastic Four. Reed Richards and the Invisible Woman. But he basically is like saving the Earth every night, is looking like these invisible asteroids are hitting Earth, and he's really smart and like diverts them without people knowing. And there's some guy that's kind of like watching him. Like he knows he has powers and they're going to lay dormant for now, but some like, I think some villain catches him doing it and is like, oh shit, this guy's actually like, I could thwart him and kill the Earth. But also we get to see Maria Hill and S.H.I.E.L.D. at the end is observing Fantastic Four, and they have a whole case file. Like, because what happens is these asteroids start hitting the Earth and the Fantastic Four combine their powers in a real weird way to like fight them. And Maria Hill at the end of it's like, okay, let's document that in case we ever need to fight them, which I think we're going to have to fight the Fantastic Four soon, Chris, maybe with this whole vampire event book coming. I don't know. But they clearly say like, if they ever turn evil, here's our file on how to fight the Fantastic Four.
Oh, so S.H.I.E.L.D.'s going full Batman.
Yeah, pretty much. They're like the Amanda Waller right now. It was a good issue. Alan Scott, Green Lantern, number 5, Sharon and Torme. What a huge retcon for Alan Scott, Green Lantern.
He's gay now. No.
No, yeah. They made his lantern part of the original Spectrum. So, like, they come out and say, like, he has will power.
I don't like that.
Well, I'd say you have to read the issue. It's all kind of related. I don't think it was that heavy-handed to where, like, we kind of get the origin of his power where they say it's like the original Spectrum that comes to Earth and that the red and the green were created first. And they don't really say like, well, they come out and say like the willpower and the rage, but like they say that their rings are different. Like they say it's different than like what, like their rings are what created all the other rings. Like that's where the power came from, was like there was, they had like the first, I don't know. There's a lot of comic book science, Chris, but the cool part is now that he's trying to argue with the Red Lantern, being like, listen, we can save you. You don't need to fight for Russia. As they're saying that, this Russian Red Lantern death squad shows up, that they have to fight, and they all have separate powers themselves with these Red Lantern rings, and they have to fight them off. They show up and they're like, all right, we have to like team up and fight these guys. It was a really good issue because they talk about like their relationship in the past. Why that, you know, when they became Green Lantern, can they ever go back and all this stuff. It's really good. I thought it was a great issue.
Cool.
And then I had my last book I got to this week. Green Lantern War Journal number 7, Johnson and Montos.
Did not expect that to be it.
Yeah, it's the last
because book. I also read it.
Oh, nice. I like this issue. We get Green Lantern trapped in like a dark multiverse or dark star universe, not multiverse, sorry. Where he keeps, you know, there's this mysterious guy telling him there's this war going on, you need to help fight in. Some crazy villains coming through, like, oh, like some world-ending villain. But on Earth, we have the John Stewart construct that's behaving like his daughter, but it's also keeping people out and keeping his mother to themselves, keeping her safe, but also, which is not the best for her Alzheimer's, which is another interesting story on the side, so... Yeah, I'm curious to see where this goes.
Yeah. But, I like the mini boss style of the story. It's like almost like a side quest.
Yeah, right. That was cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's all I got to this week because I read those couple trades.
Some stuff I caught up on Blade number 9. You talked about it last week, but it seems like maybe this series is ending next issue.
Maybe, yeah. Like the final fight is coming.
Yeah, because I think after that, so April, May. Yeah, May is Blood Hunt. So I'm wondering if there's going to be a big like continuity shift with Blade coming up. Mm. But we'll see. Another one you talked about last week was Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong. Number, what was it, 7? 6? Where's the number? 6. 6. 6 is good.
Yeah. Really good.
So it was a good issue, and I liked, like you said, the ending where Superman just like, I'm going to go fucking beat up Godzilla was cool. Superman number 12.
Yeah, it's on my list.
I really, really enjoyed this issue. It's basically places, it really wraps up everything going on. Like we get kind of Lex Luthor's past with these, this Lex Luthor revenge squad. Obviously, like Superman wins in the end, but it sets up Williamson's next story arc, which I didn't realize because I knew he was taking over Action Comics for an arc.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently, Mike, and luckily I'm buying both, so it's not going to bother me. Apparently, Superman Action are going to like cross over for a few weeks or a few months.
Interesting. Okay.
For this big Brainiac story. So what Williamson's doing there is basically a part of his Superman arc.
Mm,
and it's going to like cross back and forth. So they show Brainiac heading to town.
Nice.
So really interesting. And then Cobra Commander number 3 was a fun issue. Like, it's Cobra Commander. He ends up fighting a snake at one point. It's really on right on brand.
Nice.
And we get more of a... We get more of an insight of, like, how badass he is. Because, like, mm-hmm. these people capture him and they're trying to torture him. Like, they can't take off the mask. They try, like, welding it off and all this shit, and they can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And they try torturing him, and he ends up torturing them mentally and causing them to, like, do things that helps him escape.
Mm-hmm.
And then his buddy there that's been walking around with him, who's just, like, a guy in a suit, he just, like, transforms in this giant, like, creature.
Oh, okay.
And ends up, like, just killing all the people that were torturing him.
Wonderful.
So, really good issue. And then this week's stuff was Ultimate Spider-Man number 3.
Nice.
In which Spider-Man has this weird suit, which he can, like, make look how he wants.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how that works, but it just works. And
science. Comic science.
Exactly. And his daughter helps him pick out the suit. So, it was kind of a cool sequence where, like, he goes and he's like, what about this one? And it's like a different version of Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be like the all blue Spider-Man, or it'll be like the Scarlet Spider Spider-Man. And eventually it goes to like classic Spider-Man. And then the whole background of what's going on with this Green Goblin is that Green Goblin might be a good guy. And he fights Bullseye. So on the cover, you can see that's Bullseye's costume in this issue.
Oh, that's cool.
I really like that Bullseye design.
Nice.
And at the end, like, Green Goblin's like, hey, that's my suit. And he, like, hacks into it and forces the mask off. And then in that moment, he's like, yeah, I'll take mine off, too. And he introduces himself, and that's how it ends. So I'm like, I'm very interested to see, like, how they connect these. Because apparently him and Harry have never met before, too. Which is another interesting twist.
Yeah.
Thunderbolts number 4 was the last issue of this series. Spoiler alert, Mike, but they kill Red Skull.
Oh, you shit. Know,
the whole point of the book.
Yeah.
But the way they do it's cool because Red Skull's in Latveria, and they basically go Doom into doing it for them
mm-hmm.
by, like, taunting him. And then when he comes in to kill the Thunderbolts, he ends up hitting Red Skull instead, and the Thunderbolts, like, fuck off.
Oh, nice.
And then you get that classic Doom moment of just like, you may have got me this time, but I'll be looking
but
for
I'll
you.
But I'll be back.
Yeah. It was an awesome issue. And then they ended in a way where Kelly and Lanzig's time is done. Like, they did their four mm-hmm. issues, what they wanted to do. But it does say, like, they'll be this team will be back to do this thing. Like, they have a whole table set up with, like, different villains. And they're like, who we killing next?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So I'll be interested to see what they do with Thunderbolts moving forward. And then my pick of the week, Mike, was Batman Dark Age number 1.
Nice.
And I fucking love this book.
Oh, it's good? Okay. Yeah.
It's so I'm going to describe it to you, and you're going to think it's not a Chris book, but it's Batman's origin story.
Oh, shit. Uh-oh.
But it's an alternate version of it where, like, Bruce isn't there to witness his parents die. And he just finds out that they're dead.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's him, like, growing up with Alfred, and he's just a little shit. Like, he's always getting in trouble.
Yeah.
He's always doing stuff. And then but he can constantly get away with it because he's the heir to Wayne Enterprises. So Wayne Enterprises, right, like, has to give him legal help to make sure he never gets in real trouble
mm-hmm.
until, like, somebody takes over temporarily. And we find out that they're, like, involved with the people that killed the Waynes.
Mm-hmm.
And when he finally makes, like, that last mistake, that guy pulls the legal aid from him, sends him to jail, and that, like, creates some clause where he loses all Wayne Enterprises.
Oh, that's
and he's
crazy.
Stuck in jail. Wow. So it ends with him, like, in jail, like, okay, like, what do I do now? But he's, like, a spoiled brat, yeah, so like he doesn't not really like clicking. Very little Batman in this book, to be honest, so be prepared for that. But I really loved the story they were telling.
That's cool.
So, and then Duke number 4 came out, and it's a lot of action, and I really enjoyed it.
Awesome.
I don't see much of that. Let's see. Sandlan. I read that.
Nice.
Akira Toriyama. Really, really enjoyed it. Everybody kept saying all the comparisons were like, it's Akira Toriyama doing Dune. Uh-huh. And I don't get that at all.
Yeah.
It's
its own thing.
It really is its own thing. Like, it's this like post-apocalyptic thing. Water is scarce, so this guy's gonna go out and find water. He brings on these demons to help him, and they have to fight against the kingdom to get water. Mm-hmm. But like, it's much more in depth than that because there's all these twists and turns. And I like that this one book is one story.
Yeah, and also video games coming out this year, I believe.
And yeah, so I know the demo for it's out right now.
Yeah,
and I believe the anime is on Hulu right now.
Is it on Hulu? I've got to watch it.
Yeah, so I want to watch that now that I've read the book. And then a new manga that came out was Fake Rebellion number one.
Nice.
And this is another post-apocalyptic book, but it's in a future where like robots take over, and humans are basically, they're placed in these categories of usefulness. And this guy who's running through, we find out later that he's like part of the royal family that was taken over by these humans, and he has this machine that's attached to him that gives him like powers and shit. And so he's going around and trying to like save these different districts to start an uprising against the machines. So that's the basic plot, but it's really about like him and going through and the interactions at each area, how he gets through. I really enjoyed it. The art's phenomenal, dude. Like, I'll just pull out that's just a random page.
Oh, that's sick.
And I just really liked it.
Yeah.
It's done by Alien Books, who's like a newer publisher. And they do this weird thing. It's a soft cover, but it's got like a
dust
jacket on it.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. My only complaint about it is the binding kind of sucked. But we'll see. They're still a newer publisher, so at least for manga, they've been doing a little bit of comics over. They're the ones that just got the Valiant license. So I'll be interested to see how they upgrade their binding. Just two more. Speaking of Mad Cave, two review books. So Mugshots number one.
Nice.
Right, these are both coming out in May, everybody, so I'm not going to spoil anything. Yep. But Mugshots I really liked. It's a crime book, but it's like about a mob family and this dude who's like on the outs with the family, but then one of his family members gets, something happens to her. So he has to come back to like figure it out, but he's not welcome. It's really a book of like relationships, because like the initial setup is very basic, but it's him like navigating through the fact that he just disappeared one day. And then he just runs into like his old best friend, the chick he was in love with, and all these different people throughout it while trying to stay under the radar. I really enjoyed it. And the art I really liked, because it gives me like Oming vibes while like also being a little Darwin Cook.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And the coloring is like Blue Book or Powers, and how it's done, like it's black and white, but then there'll be like a single color as a part of the coloring to like add lighting to it. It's an interesting book. Really enjoyed it, highly recommend it. On the other hand, I also have Sanction number one, which to me was more of a paint-by-numbers crime book.
Okay.
It, other than its setting, there's nothing that really pulled me in. Like, there's a murder. We have a guy who has to come and who comes and is like, this is below me. We'll bring in the rookie to take care of it. And then he discovers it's part of something bigger. And you can kind of guess what the bigger is based on the setting. And that's the part that interests me. But as a whole, I wouldn't recommend it to people unless you're like me and you really love crime books.
You got to really like it.
Yeah. Like, if you're not into crime or you've never tried a crime book.
Yeah.
This wouldn't be the one that is going to pull you in.
Okay. Understood.
So that was a little disappointing, but there are threads to pull at that could be better moving on through the book, especially who ends up being like the organization that we're dealing with.
Cool.
Okay, Mike, that was everything I read this week. Where can people find you on the internet?
More comics than me, surprisingly, but Fortress Ricker on Twitter. Where can they find you and or the show?
You can find me at Fortress Chris on Twitter. Also at chriscomicscorner.substack.com. If you want to find the show, it's at Fortress Comics _ on Twitter or at fortresscomicnews.com. And if you want to support the show, like, subscribe, share, comment down below on this YouTube version, or if you're listening to the audio version, 5-star reviews are always a big help. And there's also patreon.com/fortresscomics. Thank you all so much for watching and or listening this week, and we'll see you all here next week.